everyone, welcome to The Great American Bash. My name is Brandon Weatherby. The Great American Bash is a podcast about the intersections of presidential politics and professional wrestling. Co-host and co-author Chris Kelly and I are experts in the field, considering that we're the authors of the book, The Donald, How Trump Turned Presidential Politics into Pro Wrestling. You could find that and pieces that we've written for places like The Washington Post and Slate, Vice, U.S. News and World Reports, and more at presidentwrestler.com. To listen to the newest episode of The Great American Bash, follow us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/GabPod, G-A-B-P-O-D. This episode features an interview with Vice News' Alex Thompson and was recorded August 11th, 2017. Here's episode 54 of The Great American Bash.
You smell what Barack has cooked.
I'm here to challenge you to a match.
When it comes to standing up for the American people, I am ready to rumble.
I think that we may need a wrestler in the White House.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Great American Bash. My name is Brandon Weatherby.
My name is Chris Kelly.
We're sitting in Washington, D.C., home of the Trump International Hotel and current residence, at least in terms of address, of our universal champion, Donald J. Trump.
It is Friday, August 11th, about 8:30 in the morning, day 203 of the Donald's championship reign.
So we're not at CM Punk levels yet, but we're definitely at like Randy Orton levels.
Yeah, I think that the benchmark is JBL's run.
Okay.
This is the JBL presidency.
Oh, that's a good, very, very good comparison. So later in this episode, we have an interview with Alex Thompson. Alex is a writer for Vice News, and he had a very interesting story this week where any other week in any other administration, save for maybe 9/11, it would have been like the story. It's Trump gets a folder full of positive news about himself twice a day. That's a real story on a real site about a real thing that was sort of verified by Sean Spicer.
Yes, and a real thing that really didn't matter in the end because that wasn't even meant to be a Linkin Park reference, but because of this week's big show.
Well, it's a big show.
North Korea.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so North Korea continues testing missiles, and the war of words between North Korea and Donald Trump, I won't even say United States because it is specifically Donald Trump, continued this week. So on Tuesday, here's what Trump said.
North Korea best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen.
Trump wants to introduce Kim Jong-un to Kane, much like John McCain wanted to introduce Bin Laden to The Undertaker. That worked.
Hold on. Here is Trump saying the same stuff again, but with Kane's music underneath.
North Korea best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen.
And here's John McCain explain how he was going to deal with terrorism in 2008.
America can win the war against terror. I'm going to introduce Osama bin Laden to the Undertaker.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're all caught up with that. That was Tuesday. On Thursday, when asked about the comments that by many seem to be saber-rattling our way to a WCW World War III, this is what Trump said.
Koreans said yesterday that your statement on Tuesday was nonsense. That's the word that they used. Do you have any response to that?
Well, I don't think they mean that, and I think it's the first time they've heard it like they heard it. And frankly, the people that were questioning that statement, was it too tough? Maybe it wasn't tough enough. They've been doing this to our country for a long time, for many years, and it's about time that somebody stuck up for the people of this country and for the people of other countries. So if anything, maybe that statement wasn't tough enough. And we're backed by 100% by our military. We're backed by everybody. And we're backed by many other leaders. And I noticed that many senators and others today came out very much in favor of what I said. But if anything, that statement may not be tough enough.
Yeah, so I think we should bring back WWE Tough Enough, a reality show where you get to fire someone every week. I think that's the perfect thing that this president should be talking about.
Now, could I mention today's tweet?
Yes.
At 7:33 a.m., less than an hour ago, he tweeted, "Military solutions are now fully in place, locked and loaded, should North Korea act unwisely. Hopefully, Kim Jong-un will find another path." So Locked and Loaded has to be a pay-per-view.
While he was tweeting that, he was doing the Roman Reigns fist motion. He was about to do a Superman punch.
See, I was imagining Batista's guns in the intro.
Yes. Or John Cena's guns in Chicago. Outside of Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what we're saying is, those are Trump helicopters above, or sorry, Secret Service helicopters above us right now.
Not so secret.
That's not good. That's not funny. We never actually explained that this is a podcast about presidential politics and professional wrestling. We just went right into it.
Well, it's a busy, there's no time for intros. We're all going to die soon. So
here's the weird thing. We talk, Alex and I talked about a little bit about this in the interview. Didn't it kind of seem like a dead week? Comparatively,
we were almost very dead this week.
But it's like one horrible story versus like 20 little bad stories.
Well, to be fair, all the other analysis you see about North Korea, contrary to this idea that he's just this crazed teenager, this, you know, teen prince or whatever, I don't even know how
Kim Jong Un.
Yeah,
okay, he's 32.
I know, but like that, he's this like just doesn't know what he's doing, and he's gonna, you know, blow everyone out of the water. He's actually very savvy. He's doing what he needs to do to keep his country existing. And the fact that I can't remember the first time I thought this, but there was something when Trump does this stuff where I think other countries and people in the, you know, the deep state go, oh, well, this guy's just talking out of his ass. Like, I think no other heads of state, even North Korea, are like, oh, he really is going to do it this time. They know he's an asshole who just says whatever he wants. So I think I thought it was like a little overblown of like, time to go down and protest nuclear war at the White House.
Yeah, but hear me out. When haven't you enjoyed a heel champion?
Jinder Mahal. This is still, right, yes, touche, Trump is touche. More entertaining than Jinder Mahal, but hopefully that will be coming to an end soon. We will talk about that towards the end of the show. You know, also in our continuing big show, the Russian investigation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Remember that thing that keeps happening? So Manafort's clearly the guy who's going to take the fall on this one, right? Because he's the one who was on the July 26th. It turns out the feds did a pre-dawn raid. Mueller getting all his ducks in a row here. I mean, people who think this investigation is going to result in Donald Trump giving up the belt, I think they're misguided. I think someone like Manafort's going to take a super kick, and then we're going to move on. I think this is going to end up being more Iran-Contra than Watergate.
Oh, okay. That's a take. That's a hot take that I haven't heard very often.
You haven't?
No.
People think this is really going to happen?
Yeah.
Oh, bunch of jabroni marks. No, I think that it looks like, you know, your Manafort, your Carter Pages, the guys who are actually on the front lines of... Donald Trump was never in a meeting with Putin. They were never twisting their mustaches together. I don't think Trump can grow facial hair. It was just like, it didn't happen the way people think it happened. Although Trump is out there also this week. He thanked Russia for kicking out.
So we should probably play that clip.
Yeah.
I want to thank him because we're trying to cut down on payroll. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm very thankful that he let go of a large number of people, because now we have a smaller payroll. There's no real reason for them to go back. So I greatly appreciate the fact that they've been able to cut our payroll for the United States. We'll save a lot of money.
Okay.
So, yeah, so he thanked Russia for kicking out all those diplomats to cut payroll. It's a good business move. You know, he's a businessman. And that's
sort of like Vince cutting down on the video division on the WWE Network.
Yeah. And no pyro. We're just cutting. They're just good businessmen. Just who cares? You know, that's what they're doing. So this FBI raid, this threat of North Korean state terrorism really reminds me of 9/11. I think it reminds Stephanie McMahon of 9/11.
A few years ago, some people tried to destroy my family. They attacked my father's reputation. They attacked my mother's reputation. And they attacked the World Wrestling Federation. They tried to rip us apart. But all they did was make my family stronger. And that's exactly how America feels right now. Because on Tuesday, America was attacked. But America is a united nation. And together, we stand strong. I am incredibly proud to be an American citizen. And I will stand up for my rights and my freedom.
One of your favorite clips.
Definitely the clip we've used the most that isn't music or bumpers.
Or Brock Lesnar saying you got to feed the Jew.
And here's that clip.
Or else it just sounds like I'm saying that.
Your promos in the UFC, I loved them because that was Brock being Brock. And so your promos here, you don't speak as much. You start laughing about the promos.
I got to feed the Jew. he's got to eat.
So do you...
No, I prefaced it. Brock Lesnar said it. It's the clip show.
Yeah.
Are we doing a clip show?
We're doing a clip show.
That's nice. The big story that we would have talked about, that you talk about in this, do you want to...
Yeah, so this is from Vice News this week, and it's one of those interesting stories that you read every once in a while that actually gives you a glimpse inside the White House. I'm like, oh, this is how things are working. So twice a day, thanks to Ranch Priebus and Sean Spicer, they would give the Donald twice daily briefings about how cool he is and how he's a cool dude. And everyone likes to be like cool dude, Donald Trump. And here's some cool photos of cool people saying you look cool. Here's some cool photos of you. Here's some cool reports that you're cool dude. That literally happened. Now that Spicer and Priebus are gone, it's not happening as often. Every once in a while, they did use it, like at the Boy Scout Jamboree when they needed it. So pretty much whenever they needed to cheer the Donald up, yeah, or someone in the White House felt like their job wasn't so safe, they would present him with a propaganda document saying, hey,
dear leader,
you're a pretty cool guy.
Yeah, it reminds me of I didn't think of this till now, but it reminds me of the bumper images that WWE uses when they're like, last Monday, Raw got more social media mentions than AMC, A&E, and Bravo combined. And it's like, that's not a real stat that means anything, but I hope it makes you feel good.
Yeah, so that was one of the three most interesting pieces I read this week. The other was, I don't think I need to go super in-depth with it, was whenever anybody says, hey, Obama did this, Trump says, well, we're going to do the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So based on what we've learned from the propaganda document from Vice and this other report, saying that, if Obama did it, we don't want to do it. Why doesn't anyone that actually want to get anything done on either side of the aisle just say, well, what you're so great is Obama had the exact opposite position, even though it might not be true?
Yeah, just work him.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Why can't anyone just go, hey, you know what Barack Obama said? He said,
we should attack North Korea.
And you'd be like, yeah, we shouldn't attack North Korea. It's not difficult, everyone. Yeah.
No, he's a small child, and you treat him like a small child.
I didn't say that.
You give him a truck to drive or something.
I'm just saying that all of the reports say that this is how you work the Universal Champion.
We got to work him into a shoot.
The other most interesting story I read this week, this is the long read of the week.
Oh, my God.
We're a podcast. We legally have to reference long reads. This is from The Atlantic, How America Lost Its Mind. It's like at least 10,000 words, yes, probably. You didn't dig it. You thought it was fine. Yeah, I liked it a lot. The reason why I liked it is because of who wrote it, mm-hmm, which is...
Arn Anderson. Kurt Anderson.
Kurt Anderson, you might know from NPR's very good show. We listened to this show in California, and you didn't hate it. Studio 360.
Right.
He's that guy. The reason why we're mentioning this on this show about professional wrestling and presidential politics is because... Though Chris and I have written a book about the Donald, we've only been doing this for like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's been doing this for like 30 plus years. He was one of the founders of Spy Magazine. Spy Magazine had Trump on the cover multiple times. They've been dealing with this dude for a very long time. New York publishing stuff. Not the most flattering stuff. So other than the Village Voice writer that wrote the first profile about Trump in 77, the guys from Spy Magazine have the most authority. So if you want to get a glimpse into this presidency, to Donald, but that isn't just the presidency, this is what you should be reading. Does this make sense?
Yeah, and I think it's also if you are, you know, one of those coastal liberal elites who need to read something to explain why something's happening that is scaring you, it's a good
Sure.
It explains how American exceptionalism, the idea that Americans are great, it's percolated for decades and centuries, and that's where we get, well, I think that Obama was born somewhere else, and I'm American, so I'm allowed to think that.
So I thought of another easier way to explain
this.
If you watched The 13th on Netflix and you didn't already know everything, you will enjoy this article.
There you go. America, we're just trying to make America great for the first time. That's what his hat says, right? I think the other piece that you liked this week was a BuzzFeed report about how Hulk Hogan's BFF, Peter Thiel, is souring on the Trump administration that he publicly is in support of and spoke at the RNC, has given lots of money, when he wasn't giving money to Hulk Hogan to take down Gawker.
So I was at the RNC, which gives us bona fides. So you can listen to our back episodes of me at the RNC. There's interviews with Linda McMahon.
Cabinet member.
Dolph Ziggler.
Repackaged, potentially. That's,
exciting.
The buzz, yeah.
And political Republican consultant Jeff Rowe. Mm-hmm. And Jeff Rowe, to me, said the most interesting thing out of all three of those guys. Anyways, listen to all of our back episodes at youmeethemeverybody.com in the podcast feed, which leads us to the Peter Thiel RNC stuff. Even at the RNC, based on this report, Peter Thiel still wasn't completely sold on the Donald. Mm-hmm. He was hedging his bets. He is still hedging his bets. That's not surprising to me in any way.
Right. He's a business guy.
There is one little note in that story that I find very interesting where he brought on someone to help with the transition that did not vote for Trump, and that came out, and then that person was bullied.
Yeah.
What I want to know is, as a human being, this is just a fun thought experiment. If you're offered to help with any presidential transition, would you take it if you didn't vote for that person? I don't know if I could or if I would. Why do it? I don't understand that.
There's people, the idea that people were helping or are helping, the people that are getting, that Trump and his allies are attacking us, the deep state, the people who are there because they are trying to make sure we don't have WCW World War III.
I get that.
Yeah. But I think that'd be your responsibility. If you're in a position where you're like, well, I'm going to work in state, and so I'm gonna talk to back channels and say, actually, no, he's just an idiot.
So it's sort of like the Mitt Romney, you should be Secretary of State even though you didn't support him.
Just to keep the...
I see. Okay.
Running, yeah.
Thank you for answering that.
That's my best guess.
No
one asked me to be on the transition, shockingly, so I don't know.
The other two interesting facts or interesting reports from this story were, it reminded me that, oh yeah, Peter Thiel did have a masquerade party and win as Hulk Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
But in this story, for the first time that was reported, there was like a Peter Thiel Hulk Hogan event, like together at Peter Thiel's house. And he's like, Hulk Hogan and I have a lot in common. Peter Thiel, I know you're a big fan of the show. I could almost guarantee that you have not read multiple Hulk Hogan and Linda Hogan autobiographies. You are not alike in any way.
I think the only way is that Hulk Hogan did not, especially at WCW, did not like young talent going over. Didn't like really like young people, and Peter Thiel wants to use the blood of young people to live forever. So I think that's basically the closest analogy.
Hulk Hogan kayfabed his wife. There's a story about her not knowing wrestling was a work and pretending the blood was real, and she cleaned his boots for him that night, the night they met. He kayfabed his wife.
Yeah, she's a real mark, a real jabron.
You are not alike.
He got, if anything, Thiel got worked into thinking this administration gave a shit about whatever he gave a shit about.
Yeah.
So, there you go, brother. There's also quotes in this that he has said privately that the administration is incompetent. And, quote, there is a 50% chance this whole thing ends in disaster. Which brings us to 9 days from now, SummerSlam. I feel like we can do a more comprehensive thing next week if the podcast and the world still exists. We'll talk about SummerSlam. 9 days away, 11 matches on the card, probably going to be 12 at least. Any thoughts before we do the go-home shows for SummerSlam this upcoming week?
I am way more excited about this than I thought I would be.
Mm-hmm.
And the last week's Raws and SmackDowns were the best as a package since the brand split.
I could see that. I think there
were flaws in both.
Yeah, sure.
But overall, as a unit,
yeah. I mean, great. The fact that on Raw you have this great the main event of SummerSlam this year, Brock versus Braun versus Roman versus Joe is such a great match. I mean, I think finish wise they can mess it up. I mean, it has a chance to be not great, but I think a multi-man match like this that can hide the weaknesses of Brock and Roman and Braun, it can make everyone can come out looking pretty good. I think it's going to be fun. And the segments they did on Monday where Brock tears through three guys and where Braun threw a chair at a guy, I think that's that awesome. Really sells it.
Interesting point. You didn't mention that Samoa Joe has any weaknesses because he is the strongest of the four.
Yes, he does not have any weaknesses.
He is the least likely to win.
Oh, he's the most likely to eat the pin.
That's great.
So that the champion doesn't have to take a pin on his way out of the company for a little while on his way to a super fight with a boy Bones Jones.
So what Chris is referencing is real world fighting.
Yeah.
You could read more about that as long as Vice Sports still exists.
Yeah. Read about Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier, a feud that was concluded a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. a piece I wrote for Vice Sports.
I'm really putting Vice over in this episode.
Yeah, no, it's good. I think they really could use your
they
help.
They could use the plugs.
As they pivot to video. So the main event is really good. If you look back to last year's SummerSlam, the main event was kind of a fight that no one really wanted and was a real... It was Orton versus Lesnar, and Lesnar ended it by hard way, which means he didn't use a blade. He used the sharp bones of his elbow to open up Randy Orton's head.
It was more brutal than UFC, because at UFC, by the time that Orton bled, they would have called it.
They would have called it, yeah. And even in UFC, which they let them go a little too long sometimes, this was still like, come on, guys, he's already dead. And also on that card was a match that's kind of, they reference a lot, but it's been totally forgotten, of Finn Balor versus Seth Rollins for the Universal Championship, the one that Trump doesn't hold. But this year, you've got on the Raw side, you've got that. So that's for the main belt. You've got, it's actually probably going to be like 13 matches, because we're going to have probably Jason Jordan versus The Miz for the IC belt.
Sure.
No, I mean, it's a thing that's going to happen. There's still the tag match. Sheamus and Cesaro probably against 2/3 of the Shield.
I'm into that. I'm into the other tag match that's going to be on
New
the
Day
card.
Usos. Yeah, the big thing for me is that the SmackDown stuff is this like weird mismatch of talent, of matches. Like, there's opportunities for dream matches. So like Styles Owens with Shane as a guest ref setting up for Hell in a Cell. We've talked about that before. That'll be a good match. They've had this match multiple times recently, so it'll be good. But you've got just weird, like, all these great talent. John Cena, Shinsuke Nakamura. John Cena will be facing Baron Corbin. Nakamura will be facing Jinder Mahal. Rusev and Orton for some reason.
Hey, why not? It'll
yeah,
be fun.
I mean, that's fine. And I think like a match that will have great the best entrance of the night, Bray Wyatt versus Finn Balor.
Here's a rumor I'd like to get started.
Yeah.
Is all of this crazy fantasy, not really fantasy booking happening because Vince knows something that the Donald told him? That, hey, you better hurry up on these storylines. We can't sit on this stuff till next year's
Seriously,
Mania.
Have you heard about North Korea? You guys better get that Demon versus the Eater of Worlds. You got to get that in the works. Yeah, it's going to be SummerSlam, has been known as kind of the WrestleMania for smarks, mm-hmm. or the smart fans who like the good work rate and all that stuff. And so it should be a good, it's going to be a hell of a 7-hour pay-per-view.
Oh, God. How long is it really going to be? 5?
Well, I think pre-show it's 7 and then probably go
4 hours.
11,
so, yeah,
11:30, yeah.
Almost 5 hours. Jesus
yeah.
Christ.
Yeah, so don't make any plans August 20th or the 21st.
For multiple reasons.
Yes, don't make any plans, guys.
Yeah, it's been a very weird week, so we should definitely end with an interview about a very weird story by Alex Thompson. You can follow him on Twitter @ALXTHOMP. Alex Thomp. Get it?
Got it.
Cool. Time for plugs for us. If you want to listen to the most recent episodes, use our SoundCloud page, SoundCloud.com/The Great American Bash. Interviews with Jim Ross, the progressive liberal. I think our Linda McMahon interview is on there. I think the Ted Cruz campaign manager is on there. There's a bunch. If you want to listen to older episodes featuring people like Chris Gethard and Sam Adonis, who is a big superstar in CMLL, and who else have we had on that?
Good old JR.
Good old JR, yeah. Just that guy. And Jake the Snake Roberts.
Yeah.
He's my favorite guy growing up. You can listen to those on the You, Me, Them, Everybody.com podcast feed. If you are in the D.C. area, come to the Wonderland Ballroom on September 1st for the next show. Do you have any plugs, anything coming up that you want to get out there?
Nothing coming up, but if you want to see the stuff I've written about wrestling and politics and everything else, go to pulsecultural.com. Catalogs everything I've done for many years.
And everything that we've written about in terms of wrestling and politics can be found on presidentwrestler.com and or DonaldTrumpIsAWrestler.com, including our book, The Donald, How Trump Turned Presidential Politics into Pro Wrestling. So without further ado, here is a chat with Alex Thompson.
You've had a pretty interesting week.
Yeah, I really have. It's been exciting.
So your week has been exciting. A lot of other people's weeks have been full of fear. That being said, it seems like it's one of the quietest weeks of the Trump administration thus far. And I'd like to point out that in addition to your story, there's the whole North Korea thing. The Russian thing is still going on. But for some reason, this week doesn't feel like it's as hectic as it was maybe 2 weeks ago.
Well, I think that in the Trump era, you know, there's almost like Trump goggles where, you know, every single week is compared to the craziest week. So 2 weeks ago, you had, you know, the collapse of Trump care. You had a bunch of other things kind of go wrong in the Trump administration with the Russia probe. You had all the Jeff Sessions news going on. You had rumors about him firing Robert Mueller. You had the House trying to pass a budget. So yes, like now with Congress out of session and with Trump on a working vacation, as he's calling it, up in New Jersey, it's certainly and almost no public schedule to speak of besides what you see on Instagram of him golfing. There doesn't seem to be as much swirling about.
You did stir the pot, though. You definitely made some of the news that swirled. Your piece, Trump gets a folder full of positive news about himself twice a day. Was this in any way surprising to you?
The thing that surprised me about the story was that they were taking, you know, in a government that isn't necessarily fully staffed up, they're taking time away from staffers in the White House and at the RNC to do something to basically both soothe Trump's ego and to, you know, try to, you know, it's also a mechanism for staffers to present this propaganda document and, you know, ingratiate themselves to Trump. So I guess, you know, it just the surprising part to me was just that they would dedicate the resources. At the other end, I think your question's astute in that there's a long documented history of Trump being very, very receptive to flattery. And you can see it in all of the way his aides treat him, and especially when they first come on the scene. I mean, you saw Stephen Miller come to the press briefing. I can't remember if it was earlier this week or last week because the news moves so fast. But, he was talking about how amazing Trump was. When Anthony Scaramucci started as comms director, he talked about how much he loved the president. I think he said the word love, several times in that debut. And clearly, even aides will tell you off the record or on background, aides both in Congress and, you know, from the campaign, that when you're about to make an argument to Trump or make a presentation, a little bit of flattery can go a long way.
It's interesting because the two guys that aren't necessarily associated with the most Trump flattery are Priebus and Spicer, and apparently this was their idea.
Yes, well, I mean, that was what I meant. You know, they both tried to position themselves in order to be the ones to deliver the document. And I think it goes to show the fact that they had staff prepare this twice a day since near the beginning of the administration shows that they knew that the way to gain Trump's approval was through this sort of flattery and through showing him something that he really does care about, which is news coverage.
And you point out in this that it might not continue as much considering that both men are gone, but it has been used since then, just not as consistently.
Exactly. And I think that's also a sign of how this wasn't just a random idea that went nowhere. The fact is that Sean Spicer and Ryan Priebus are both gone, but the propaganda document remains. And it's not as regimented in terms of its production as it was before, but the fact that Trump is still receiving this document full of positive, glowing news about himself, I think shows that it wasn't just a Spicer and Priebus thing, that they were recognizing how to gain a receptive audience with the president.
Something that's not in the story, but that's on your Twitter timeline, is Sean Spicer resharing this story, but also claiming that it was from Vox, which is inherently funny for multiple reasons. But do you feel like that verified everything that he would not verify on the record with you?
Yes, the fact that he thought I was working at Vox was certainly funny, especially when he's calling out that we were being you know, with that we weren't using the proper facts and that he didn't do it in his tweet. I felt that if you look at all of the supposed denials of the story, or at least saying that the story is not true, they can't point to anything in the story that isn't true. You know, before the story was published, we reached out to Spicer and we emailed with him, and he said the story was misleading on several levels. I believe the quote was, and we asked him, okay, well, we're willing to change the story if we're wrong. We had three sources, former and current White House officials, describing in great detail the production of this document. So we asked him, you know, we'll change the story if you can show us that this isn't true. And he chose not to respond. And in all of the, all of the aftermath, the White House has not been able to point to a single thing in the story that is not factual.
This is sort of a vague question. Is there anything that you think is going to happen that will make everything else make more sense with some more context? For example, the FBI raiding the former campaign director. Like, now everything makes a little bit more sense. Is there anything like that coming up that you see that maybe the general public doesn't?
Well, you know, Robert Mueller is who's leading the Russia investigation, is famous and was famous for never, ever leaking. And you saw with the Paul Manafort raid that actually happened a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So I can almost guarantee you that things have already been going on the last few weeks that we still don't know about and that we're going to know about in the following weeks. You also are seeing a increasingly likely scenario where Donald Trump Jr. and Paul Manafort are going to have to testify in public, either before the Judiciary or the Senate Intelligence Committee this fall. And in addition to all of these outside, all these pressures, these self-created, crises or at least distractions by the Trump administration, there are actually a few very serious deadlines coming up for the Congress and for the president at the end of September. You have the debt ceiling. Like, America is going to hit the debt ceiling, I think, either early October or late September. The government runs out of money on October 1st, September 30th. So the government will shut down if they don't pass a budget, and they have to pass a budget in order to pass tax reform. The CHIP healthcare, which gives healthcare to like 8 million children, that expires at the end of September. And you have this whole host of deadlines that the Congress is not even close to getting to. All in the meanwhile, Trump's attention is clearly elsewhere. And you have already some internal dissension within the White House over the fact that Trump has resented stories suggesting that John Kelly is taking away his Twitter feed, or that, and you also saw that John Kelly made the cover of Time this week. And, while the cover of Time doesn't have the same panache as it used to in broader society, it is something that Trump cares about.
So do you think that that's actually a bad thing for General Kelly to be on the cover of Time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Because you saw this early in the administration with Steve Bannon, actually, where there was lots of reporting that Steve Bannon was on the cover of Time, I think, in the second week or third week of the administration with the title "The Great Manipulator." And then you had the SNL skit where Steve Bannon, sat at the presidential desk and Donald Trump sat at the little kiddie table, played by Alec Baldwin. And after that, you saw a large diminishing of influence in the Bannon wing of the White House. And I think, this Time cover with John Kelly that says something like, the last hope or something to that effect, mm-hmm. I think will breed resentment. Trump does not like people, using what he can. He doesn't like being used as a pad for another person's fame. And even if that's not what John Kelly is trying to do, that may be how President Trump perceives it.
Have you ever covered a family business in the past? I know that your title does not include family reporter, but the White House is essentially run like a family business. Have you ever covered any other businesses, maybe in the Fortune 500, that are run by families rather than a boardroom?
You know, so I've never covered a family business at all. I mean, the closest I've done is, you know, I've done some reporting on just governments where families have been influential. But no, in America, you know, because you have other families like, you know, in Iraq, Saddam and his family was incredibly influential, and he really brought them in. Not that these families are in any way the same, but they... It is not something like we have seen in American history. I think probably the closest analog that I can think of, I believe that President Taft's daughter was very, very involved, but it was much more of like a socialite sort of thing, and not a close advisor in the way that Jared Kushner and Ivanka are.
Do you feel like you have any sort of advantage by reporting from New York rather than D.C.?
So I go back and forth a lot, but I do think it is very good to get out of D.C. as much as you can, whether or not that's to New York or somewhere else in the country. I think that it's true what they say, that people in D.C. can get a little bit of tunnel vision, and it's nice to kind of shake things up and just see things from other people's perspectives. Because what may seem like a story to someone in D.C. may not seem like a story to someone in New York, and vice versa. And I think it always helps to keep yourself on your toes and be hearing as many perspectives as possible. And that also includes getting out of like the New York, D.C. Acela corridor too.
Okay, so I'm in D.C., you're in Brooklyn. How is this piece playing not in the Acela corridor?
That's a good question. I haven't done any actual reporting on it. You know, I haven't gone out into the country and interviewed people about it. I would be surprised if the story really shook up the people that are with Trump, you know, that 35-37% of people that mm-hmm. still approve of him. I doubt that this story will change their mind about him. The one thing I do think is that this may change people's perspective, within Washington, in terms of, you know, people that are important in Washington. That's my hope anyway, is that, you know, when it comes to Republicans in Congress, when it comes to senior aides to lawmakers, to people in the White House, you know, this could be something that affects their behavior. But I don't think that this story by itself would necessarily have a huge effect on people that already support the president.
You're a reporter, you're doing reporty things. Is there anything, any story that you think could get through to the 35 to 37% of supporters, or 35% of the base that still loves him? That is there any reality that can shift that mindset?
So I don't want to overgeneralize like who these Trump supporters are, but like you have to, I think it's important to recognize that a lot of these people that voted for Trump have felt attacked from the day that he won. You know, they feel like they took a little bit of a chance on an outsider. Not all of them. Some of them were enthusiastic supporters, but most of them, I think a lot of them felt they were taking a chance on an outsider, and I think they have felt vilified from the very beginning. And so I think that they feel defensive. And I think that with every single negative story of Trump, they still feel a little bit defensive. And I think that they're going to give him a much longer leash than maybe people in the media or even, you know, Republicans in Congress are willing to give the president. So I think that's a very long answer to your question, which I think is there's probably a good 20 to 25% that will stick with him always. I mean, you look at the approval rating of Nixon when he resigned, it was still around 20-25%. So, but I do think that there is still a floor that he has not reached yet. I still think there's probably about 10 to 15% of people in that around 35 to 40 number that, you know, are that can be convinced. And I think it will just be, it's not going to be one story. I think it's just going to be a cumulative effect. You know, if they feel that he's focusing more on tweets and media coverage and, you know, stories about himself than he is about their needs and their health care, and then I think over time that they'll begin to resent. But I still think that Trump could turn things around, and, you know, he might be able to have them stick with him.